Welcome to The Point. I'm Mindy Todd. One of the things that makes the Cape and Islands so special is the natural beauty. From sand plain grasslands to beaches, pine oak woodlands to kettle ponds, we have a diversity of habitats. And we're fortunate to have many of those places protected from development and open for our enjoyment. Today, we discuss conservation lands, the history of land conservation, current efforts to protect open space, and some of our favorite places to enjoy. Joining us, Janet Milkman. She's Executive Director at Barnstable Land Trust. Welcome, Janet.
Hi, Mindy. Thanks for having me.
Michael Lux, Executive Director of the Harwich Conservation Trust. Hi, Mike.
Hi, Mindy.
Rachel Freeman's Executive Director of the Nantucket Land Bank. Hi, Rachel.
Hi, Mindy.
Darcy Schofield's Islands Director for the Trustees of Reservations. Hi, Darcy.
Good morning.
And Mark Robinson's Executive Director of the Compact of Cape Cod Conservation Trust. Hi, Mark.
Hi, all. How are you?
All right. So, Mark, I think this might be a question you can answer. How much land is in conservation on the Cape, either in acreage or percentage of total land? Do we know?
Well, it depends on who's doing the counting and different definitions that people apply. But we think it's somewhere between 35 to 40%. And that includes state, federal, town, and nonprofit lands that are permanently protected as open space.
Yeah. Darcy, how about on the vineyard?
I think we're at about similarly 30% of the land area is protected land, including protected farms and other open spaces. And it can speak more accurately to the trustees where we have about a little over 1,000 acres in land that's protected.
Mm-hmm. Rachel, how much on Nantucket?
Interestingly, Nantucket is similar in that it depends who's doing the counting, but we generally hear numbers in the range of 50% of the island being conserved or higher at this point.
Mike, when did people in the region begin to realize that setting aside open space was important? Did it coincide with the uptick in development?
You're right, Mindy. The development cycles really inspired folks to patterns of land use around them and how it was impacting their quality of life. And, you know, there was significant town action in certain sectors of the Cape in the 70s and 80s, specifically in Brewster. Town meeting voters set aside large portions of what is now called the Punkhorn Park lands. And then we transitioned into the Cape Cod Land Bank era, which in 13 out of 15 towns then transition to Community Preservation Act, with Chatham and Provincetown retaining both Land Bank and Community Preservation Act, a portion of each of those efforts leading to additional open space protection results. So people have been rallying for years.
Yeah. And so I guess it's different depending on, you know, which town you're talking about, who started when. And Janet, the Barnstable Land Trust was established, what, 40 years ago?
Yes, we've been around since 1983, and I think a lot of the land trusts started around then. But a bunch of conservation-minded civic folks, I think including Mark Robinson, felt that it was really important to start a local nonprofit organization to be able to do things that the towns couldn't necessarily do, and they've done that very successfully.
Yeah. Mark, tell us about that, because I imagine in the beginning you might have gotten some mixed reaction to that, right?
To the start of land trusts?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, you know, I compare it to the old saying, all hands on deck. I mean, it was very clear that neither the state nor the federal government was going to play much of a role in protecting lands on the Cape. The National Seashore, of course, was a big anchor of open space in the Outer Cape, but that was now 60 years ago. And the federal presence since then has been very light, a little bit in Mashpee with the National Wildlife Refuge, and the state has added a number of important places in the 1980s at South Cape Beach, High Head, and Nickerson State Park. But it really became the work of the local people to preserve what they were very much fearful of losing. I think it really is, it was a question of anxiety in the 1980s, where instead of a death by a thousand cuts, it was death by a thousand bulldozers. And in 1986 in Barnstable alone, there were 1,000 new building permits issued. I mean, it was just a frenzy of development, and that caused a lot of anxiety in people. And the anxiety led to action, and the action was to go to town meeting, vote monies, bond monies, that the town was going to take a stand and not let every piece of open space go the way of residential subdivisions, which we were on the course for. So between 1984 and 2007, Cape Towns, with the help of their private nonprofit land trusts, preserved almost 10,000 acres. And that was a real, when you think about the complexities of doing 5 acres here and 10 acres there and 2 acres here, it's a big lift. And it was really very well supported by the voters and the citizens rallying around the idea.
Rachel, the Nantucket Land Bank was the first land bank established in the country, right? And operated differently from nonprofit land conservation groups. Give us a little bit of history of the establishment of the Nantucket Land Bank and explain how you're funded.
Sure. Thank you so much. The Nantucket Land Bank was a response by the Nantucket community, similar to what Mark just described, where there was increasing development pressure. And on Nantucket in particular, what they noticed was that the rates, or I'm sorry, the cost of property was rising so fast that private nonprofits were unable to really keep up with those prices. And so even though the Nantucket Conservation Foundation was founded in 1963, which is our largest landowner on the island in terms of conservation land, it became apparent that there was a need for something else. And so the director of planning at the time, Bill Klein, actually came up with a very unique idea, which is a governmental land trust to some degree, which was voted in at the Nantucket Town Meeting and created through an act of the state legislature in end of 1983, beginning of 1984. And the premise was that the land bank was designed to hold and acquire properties for conservation, recreation, and agriculture on the island. And we're funded by a 2% transfer fee on real estate transfers, most real estate transfers, not all of real estate transfers. There are some exemptions. And so we have a continuous funding stream, which has really assisted in preserving particularly things like waterfront areas. So Nantucket has a plethora of public beaches where waterfront, as we know, is some of the most expensive property on the Cape and Islands. The land bank is able to provide that service.
Yeah. I was going to ask you to highlight some of the properties on the island that might not realize are there because of the land bank, and the beaches is a good one, right?
Yes, we have a huge number of beaches where there's no sticker required, there's no paid parking. It's simply a public beach. You can go, you can choose, you can drive there, park, get out of your car, and lay out your beach towel. And the land bank maintains those and takes quite a bit of pride in being able to offer that to Nantucket community and the visitors to the island.
Darcy, the Trustees of Reservations owns properties throughout Massachusetts. When was it established, and when did you begin to acquire properties on the Vineyard and also Nantucket?
Sure. So we were formed in 1891, and the Trustees of Reservations is one of the oldest land conservation organizations in the globe. There's a few of us. And so we're really proud of that long history and legacy of acquiring land to protect nature and making it available for people to enjoy. Talking about earlier, healthy communities, and we think that's really paramount to our healthy communities. So we're really proud of that legacy, and we're really excited about continuing that legacy long into the future. On Martha's Vineyard, we acquired our first property similarly, as you suggested, Mindy, starting in 1959 at Cape Hogue Wildlife Refuge. And the imminent threat of massive subdivisions, some particular ones that stand out were at Waisquy, which was a 750 lot subdivision on about 200 acres. Similarly, on Cape Hogue was not as large, but Cape Hogue is a barrier beach, so it would be a development all on a along a very delicate, fragile, and pristine barrier beach. And also a notable one too is Katama Farm, which is owned by the town of Edgartown, and we lease that with our partners, which is also another 750 or more subdivision. So that's where we started to see the community starting to rally very passionately about preserving these extraordinary places and working in partnership with the trustees and other conservation partners to preserve them. So in Waiskew Reservation, we protected that in the mid-70s. Again, Cape Poe, we started in 1959, and we continued to acquire parcels up and until the early 90s. And then Long Point Wildlife Refuge is an interesting conservation story where, at the rise of the tourist industry on Martha's Vineyard, we were starting to see that there was a landowner who acquired a large amount of land, created a small hunting camp so that he could invite his friends to do shore, water bird hunting, duck hunting, essentially. And that passed on for quite some time, but his children were not interested in maintaining this place as a hunting and tourist destination. They really wanted to see this land protected for the public's use and enjoyment. So that was an extraordinary example, as Rachel was discussing earlier, about how people really love these natural areas in where close to where they live and really rallying to see them be protected forever and for everyone.
I'm thinking, Mark, and you, I think you probably know this story, Fort Hill, where that was scheduled. I mean, they had stakes in the ground, right? And I guess some movers and shakers flying above saw this and went, whoa, wait a minute, we have to save this. That's a perfect example of, I mean, that's one of the most beautiful spots on the entire Cape. And you just can't even imagine what that would be like had they not saved that from development.
Yeah, that was part of the National Seashore effort, and it was literally a helicopter out of the sky with a bunch of congresspeople descending and landing on Fort Hill because that was a cleared area. They saw a billboard that said lots for sale, and they went back to the Congress and said, you know, we just saw the most beautiful place on Cape Cod, and we have to work to save it. The National Seashore is really a an amazing story of persistence by a number of people, particularly people like Senator Saltonstall back in the 1950s, and his staff deserves most of the credit for writing the legislation, which was unique in the country. How do you design a national park in a long settled area with villages and rapid growth? And they were able to come up with the National Seashore Bill, which included innovative zoning features, and so that they could make a national park in and amongst private homes. And there's still about 600 private properties within the National Seashore, and it's a delicate balance of accommodating them without destroying the beauty of the park.
Yeah, it shows that where there's a will, there's a way, right? We're talking about conservation land and open spaces this hour. We want to hear from you. How do you use open space on the Cayman Islands? What are some of your favorite places to visit? You can join the conversation at 866-999-4626. That's 866-999-4626. Or you can shoot us an email, thepoint@capeandislands.org. We'll talk more after a quick break. You're listening to The Point. We're talking about conservation land and open spaces this hour. If you'd like to join our conversation, 866-999-4626. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. With us is Janet Milkman, the Executive Director at Barnstable Land Trust, Mike Locke, Executive Director, Harwich Conservation Trust, Rachel Freeman, Executive Director of the Nantucket Land Bank, Darcy Schofield, Islands Director for the Trustees of Reservations, and Mark Robinson, Executive Director of the Compact of Cape Cod Conservation Trust. All right, so what are some of the factors that your organizations consider when you're identifying places or parcels for conversation? Mike Locke, why don't we start with you? What are you looking for?
Well, we review properties for potential conservation acquisition based on a variety of criteria, including whether a property provides recharge to a public water supply, perhaps in a watershed to a pond or a coastal embayment like our estuaries and harbors, whether a property has state-designated sensitive wildlife habitat, whether a property provides connectivity to adjacent protected land, thereby creating a larger conservation assemblage, or whether the land has a public scenic view that all could enjoy or could accommodate a trail. And there are several other environmental values that we consider as a local land trust on moving forward with any particular project.
Rachel, how about you? When you mentioned that you're not only conservation but recreation and agricultural land, so what are you looking at?
We're looking at similar to Mike, as he just mentioned. You know, we're looking at things like connectivity, trails, environmental factors, but we are broader, and so. One of the things that we're using to evaluate properties isn't just environmental value, but also community needs. So when we're looking at recreation, you know, we have built a playground in a very high density area. We have considered whether or not there's a need for playing fields for the schools and the public teams that play on the island. And same for agriculture. We feel that local sustainable food sources are an important component of a healthy community. And therefore, when there's opportunities for farmland to be maintained, most of the time, what we're looking for is existing farms that have actually, you know, are going to turn over and perhaps need to be purchased. And then we can hopefully continue the legacy or assist in continuing the legacy of that farm. So we are broader. There's definitely the environmental and conservation goals, which are overarching, but we are public, and so that's a huge piece of the puzzle as well for us.
Darcy, how about the trustees? What do they consider?
So the trustees, we're really excited about to launch a new 5-year strategic plan. That's for everyone forever, where we're really looking to accelerate our pace of conservation more so than we have in throughout our history. And we're also looking to elevate our stewardship of our special places, inspiring climate hope through action, and ensuring we're delivering our mission as well by welcoming and connecting people to nature. And creating a sense of belonging. So as we look to the future for conservation, really understanding the threats of climate change and how that's affecting our communities, how that's affecting our natural systems, the trustees is sort of prioritizing land conservation in areas in partnership, forests and farms in particular, in areas where we see less of a presence on the map. We're also looking to accelerate more urban conservation lands, so we're having a greater impact for those dense populated areas of connecting people to nature. And then on places like Martha's Vineyard and Nantucket, we have the Trustees of Reservations only has 3 wildlife refuges, and those are on Martha's Vineyard and Nantucket. And those designations are really critical for us in how we think about conservation in the future on the islands, which is really digging down on ensuring the resilience and the biodiversity of these extraordinary places. So, very specifically, thinking about nature-based solutions for climate resilience, where we see the impacts of climate change happening, you know, on a daily basis as these changing beaches and these storms, but also with the sandplain grasslands and shrublands, really preserving these rare and endangered flora and fauna as well, is a top priority for the work that we're doing for conservation. And on both Martha's Vineyard and Nantucket, we are partnering with a number of conservation organizations to do some really 2 large-scale important conservation projects. So on Martha's Vineyard, we are advancing a salt marsh restoration project. It's coming from our learned experience at the Great Marsh in the North Shore. How do we translate that onto Martha's Vineyard? We've hired some consultants and experts, and we're working in partnership with the Land Bank and Sheriff's Meadow, the Martha's Vineyard Shellfish Group, and community partners to design and restore one of the largest salt marsh systems on Martha's Vineyard to ensure large-scale protection, not only of the ecosystem, but the resilience of the barrier beach at Cape Hogue Wildlife Refuge in Leland. And we're also similarly working in partnership with Nantucket Conservation Foundation and other community partners on Nantucket to look at some critical pieces that are highly threatened to sea level rise and flooding, on Cascada Coteau Wildlife Refuge. So these are areas like Cascada Woods, the Holover, and the Cascada Pond. So we're looking at a variety of nature-based solutions, and why those are so important is particularly at the Holover, which is an entrance parcel owned by Nantucket Conservation Foundation that is routinely flooded. And when we have storms in those trails, are basically become streams that are, knee-deep. Our staff were standing there knee-deep. And so it's very alarming to us, not only for this is such a beloved place for so many people on Nantucket and abroad, nationally. How do we ensure that people can continue to experience this special place? But how do we also continue to protect these rare and endangered species, which again, those impacts of climate change and the storms, increased storms, is making it even more and more
Oh,
difficult
yeah,
for
for
us
sure.
to preserve those rare and endangered species.
Yeah,
So
you got
that's
a,
really how
yeah, there's a lot going on, Darcy. A lot going on.
we're
So, Janet, Barnstable is one of the more developed towns on the Cape. Does this factor into how you evaluate places for conservation?
It really does. And I, just sort of building on what our colleagues have talked about. We have Hyannis, which is the downtown of Cape Cod, and we have Kituate and Osterville, which are more rural places. And so we feel it's really important to be able to provide open space in all of our seven villages. And in Hyannis, that's the most densely developed place on Cape Cod and the most underserved for open space. So we have to figure out how to provide open space there where it's mostly developed.
Yeah,
I was
that's a
just talking to
challenge,
a, it
yeah.
is a challenge, and a volunteer told me the other day who grew up in Kituate that he, I'm sorry, grew up in Hyannis. He said, they used to play in the cemetery because that was the open space. So, that's been part of our strategy around the Twin Brooks Golf Course, and now we have a great opportunity to make sure that 20 acres of that is public open space, and it will be, the big park in
Yeah.
downtown.
Great. I talked to Julie, who's giving us a call from Orleans. Hi, Julie.
Hey, I always love your program, and I loved that story about Fort Hill. I walk there all the time, so great to know the history behind saving that space. But the reason why I was calling was so I live in Orleans, and I go to Wildflower Lane, like the residential area, the residence area of the beach. And a friend of mine and I, we were sitting out on the beach, way to the left, and a ranger came up and kicked us off because it was owned by the neighborhood behind the beach. And so I had intended to go like further down to the low water mark, but I was told that people who own the beach own it all the way to the low water mark. Is that correct?
Go ahead, Mark. That's a good question, Julie.
Yeah, ironically, I wrote my master's thesis on this topic. So, Julie, they're correct in their general assumption. Private landowners do own to the extreme low water mark in Massachusetts. We're one of the few states that has that kind of restriction, which is ironic, being the great progressive Massachusetts. We have the most illiberal shoreland laws in terms of public access. But it's based on the colonial idea that the foreshore was intended to be used for the public, for only for fishing, fowling, and navigation. And so the idea of strolling the beach is a 20th century concept. People didn't do it for fun back in the colonial days. And that's why it's so important for public agencies and nonprofit land trusts to work as best they can in providing more beachfront that is available to the public. And so I'm sorry to say that I actually thought that we didn't have guards and rangers like that on the Cape. I thought that was a vineyard
Julie,
thing.
thanks for the call.
Horrible.
Yeah,
And
I
is there any
mean.
way to change that law? I mean, because it's such an antiquated and it seems to be very unfair because I could see the high water mark, but the low water mark,
Right.
that's so,
Yeah.
especially in Orleans, there's not a lot of beach available to the year-rounders and the locals.
Yeah.
So it just seems
I guess,
like
you
antiquated.
could talk to your legislators, but I don't know, Mark, has there ever been an effort to try to
No, I
change
mean,
that?
Billy Bulger tried when he was Senate president. He passed a bill and to provide some money to buy easements, like so that the land that Julie's talking about, if you bought an easement from the private property owner, the public could walk there. We did one of those in Orleans over on Skagit, Julie, but it was a failed experiment. You wouldn't have enough money to take easements from everybody in Massachusetts.
Yeah,
So
unfortunate.
it would be upsetting, 400 years of real estate law, and the legislature itself, I don't think, is going to be able to fix it.
Yeah, Julie, thanks for the call. Mark, how much undeveloped land remains on the Cape? And of that land, are there significant parcels that would be good candidates for conversation? I imagine all of you have your eyes on some pieces of property, right?
Yeah, the latest estimates are about 14% of the land is still up for grabs, neither developed nor preserved on the Cape. And those are a lot of small pieces scattered here and there. We're only finding now that there are a number of larger parcels still available, and those tend to be what we call perceived open space. And the Barnstable Land Trust is really leading the charge and trying to find a way to have the government recognize the importance of these perceived open spaces. So we're talking about golf courses, campgrounds, museum grounds, the type of, private institutions that people enjoy as community assets. And these are under risk just as other private properties are. We've seen golf courses be converted to other uses, including perhaps solar fields. We've seen the summer camps go up for sale, the biggest one being Sea Camp in Brewster, which the town had the foresight to buy for $26 million in bond money. But those are the bigger properties still left, and they, their fate is going to control some of the destiny of the towns that they're in. The other thing I just wanted to mention is that there is a role for private property landowners to play, and we're trying more and more to reach out to people to have them understand that they can preserve their own land. If they have some extra acres, they can either donate it, we can buy it, they can place a conservation restriction on it. And so we're trying to educate people about the tax benefits for doing that, as well as understanding that sometimes we have to raise money and buy it. Nobody's done that better than Mike Locke at the Harwich Conservation Trust. But so, in fact, on June 21st, we're having a regional forum for landowners in Harwich, and we would be inviting the public to come and learn about some of these tax advantages for land conservation.
Yeah. Anybody want to add anything to what Mark's saying? Go ahead, Janet.
Yeah, I think this idea of perceived open space, I mean, we all have our favorite places, the bogs, cranberry bogs, people walk around those all the time. We have one under agreement right now, so we can protect the recreation and water quality aspects of that land. We're actually purchasing a golf course in Kitiwit. It'll be a golf course for a little while, but after that, it'll be a local nature park. And these places are the community gems that people don't realize are at risk. And there's a lot we can do. Like Mark said, there's a lot that private landowners can do, and neighbors who realize that they see a for sale sign going up, call your local land trust and
And see,
see
they
what we
might,
can do.
yeah, might already be on your radar, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, go ahead, Darcy.
So I wanted to go back and correct what I stated. About 40% of the land area on Martha's Vineyard is protected. So I said 30, and I wanted to correct that. And I wanted to also mention there's about 30% of the land area that is sort of developable or open for development. And it's projected that 80% of that will be developed. And I think we're really starting to think we. One of the things I love about the Vineyard is the conservation partners meet together, and we talk about how we can align our conservation priorities, and create sort of that strength and alliance and moving forward to ensure we're really being very strategic about how we approach conservation and very dynamic in how we work with landowners on that.
Yeah, I got an email from Pat in West Tisbury who says the Polly Hill Arboretum, our favorite. We go so often it feels like our own garden. What a gift. The Arboretum is a wonderful example of partnership to preserve a lovely piece of land filled with unusual and exotic trees and plantings. A longtime owner and dedicated horticulturist, Polly Hill and family joined with conservation-minded philanthropist David Smith, brought together by the Vineyard Conservation Society to make this a public garden for enjoyment and education. That is is a treasure for sure, Polyhill Arboretum. You know, and Rich, I'm thinking on the Nantucket, Linda Loring had, you know, she really was very clever, right? I mean, that Linda Loring Foundation, little bits, she'd buy a little bit of land here and then buy a little, and then kind of connect it all together. So she was also really a pioneer in saving some of that land.
She certainly was. And the Linda Loring Nature Foundation now has about 275 acres of land, which the land bank is lucky to abut in Matticat. And they're doing incredible things with ecological preservation and education of the community. They have fantastic programs. Yeah. So, yes. Yeah. That's just another contributor to the collaboration of conservation on the island.
Yeah. Mike?
There, it's interesting too. There's efforts afoot to address both the need to protect our shared natural resources and address affordable housing challenges. And some of those are being led by our local land trusts. There's an example in Harwich at the gateway to the Robert F. Smith Colebrook Preserve that combines historic preservation, eco restoration, and affordable housing. The Falmouth 300 Committee. Mm-hmm. That town's local land trust is leading three different projects that achieve natural resource protection goals and affordable housing goals. Yeah. And as in Harwich, those Falmouth projects have strategically advanced affordable housing through redevelopment of previously disturbed areas. And Brewster Conservation Trust just recently acquired 14 acres. Beautiful property borders both the Cape Cod Rail Trail and Route 6A. And part of that acreage is a 1.5 acre parcel with a pre-existing home that will be maintained by Brewster Conservation Trust. And then they're partnering with Habitat for Humanity to create two additional affordable single family homes. Yeah. So some nice collaboration happening to address both natural resource protection and affordable housing challenges.
Absolutely. The Wampanoag people have been on this land for thousands of years. What kind of collaborations have been done with tribal members to identify culturally important places for conservation? Anybody? Go ahead, Jen.
Yeah, so Barnstable Land Trust has launched an effort along with the Native Land Conservancy. We're really lucky to have one of the few Indigenous-led land trusts on Cape Cod, the Native Land Conservancy, which is located in Mashpee. And in partnership with them, Barnstable Land Trust launched a First Light Collaborative this past fall, which invited basically all of the land trusts on Cape Cod and a few off Cape as well to start working with our Indigenous partners on exactly that, figuring out how we can learn from them, how we can partner with them, how we can find opportunities to provide ways for them to do their cultural practices and other fulfill other of their needs on our properties. Yeah. So it's very exciting.
I'm going to mention one, the Historical Society of Old Yarmouth. They have the nature trails by the Kelly Chapel, and there is a wonderful Wampanoag Witu built there. It's Turtle Witu. Wabin Wikosh, he talks about Native culture and history and takes tour groups, mostly kids and stuff, through there and talks a lot about the culture. So that's another. You can see the Witu year-round, but I think the walks are only in the nicer weather. But there's so many great spots that we all like to explore, and we're going to talk a little bit about that. And we'd love to hear from you. Where are some of the lands that you like to traverse? 866-999-4626 is our number. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org, and we'll talk more after a quick break. You're listening to The Point, and we are talking about conservation land and open spaces this hour. Love to hear from you. How do you use open space on the Cape and Islands? What are some of your favorite places to visit? 888-866-999-4626 is our number. That's 866-999-4626. Or you can send this an email, thepoint@capeandislands.org. With us is Janet Milkman, Executive Director at Barnstable Land Trust, Mike Locke, Executive Director of the Harwich Conservation Trust, Rachel Freeman, Executive Director of the Nantucket Land Bank, Darcy Schofield, Islands Director for the Trustees of Reservations, and Mark Robinson, Executive Director of the Compact of Cape Cod Conservation Trust. All right, so before I tap your brains on some of your favorite places, I thought we, Mark, want to go back to this, what people can do. What are the advantages for landowners to put their property into conservation? And there, isn't like a one size fits all. There's like lots of different mechanisms that they can follow, right?
Yeah, exactly. The tax benefits of preserving land for landowners and taxpayers has never been more generous than it is right now. And the reason for that is the combination of federal, state, and local tax advantages. On the federal side, a donation of land or a conservation restriction donation, or even just selling to the charitable land trust at a reduced rate, all can generate federal income tax deductions, charitable contributions. And so it's based on appraised values that the landowner provides. And the those can be very valuable in reducing people's adjusted gross income and taking the tax benefit over a series of years. So it's very powerful, very attractive right now. And in fact, just a couple of years ago, the Commonwealth reinstituted its state income tax deduction for similar types of donated property or bargain sales of property to charity. So that's an additional 5% tax savings for people who make those kind of contributions. And then, of course, if you give the land away or sell it and you don't own it anymore, it's not no longer in your portfolio for property tax reasons. So the Cape Towns have been very generous in providing property tax relief for people who donate conservation restrictions. So they put these all together. There's also a state tax credit for eligible lands that my office has processed about 150 of them now. So it's a very generous time, and I encourage people who haven't yet taken that step but maybe thought about it, this is the time, and contacting your local land trust or myself at the Compact of Cape Cod Conservation Trust, we can give you that information.
All right. Rachel, you on Nantucket, you did a survey of where people like to go, right? And found out that most people don't venture very far from their own homes.
Yes. Yeah, so basically at an island fair, we asked people to put a pin in the area that was their favorite conservation area that the land bank owned on Nantucket. And it turned out that most people's backyard was their favorite conservation area. And the land bank property that was directly outside their house and or next door, which, you know, is an interesting plug for neighborhood green spaces. Right.
But we're going to get people to venture out because we're going to talk about some of the best places to go see. All right, Jenna, I know it's like, what's your favorite child? Right. So give us a couple of must sees that are spaces in Barnstable.
So I would pick Fuller Farm, which is a 22-acre farm and woodland on 149 in Marston's Mills as a real high point. There's about a little over a mile of trails. It's one of the few sort of open fields left in our area, and it is borders on Middle Pond. It's just a lovely, lovely spot. And then I would say many locals know about it, but others don't know about Eagle Pond.
We're sharing a secret.
Yes, I know. I know, but it is a really wonderful 150-plus acre woodland parcel with a beautiful pond in the middle in Kituit.
Yeah. All right. I'm going to share another secret spot. I think it's a secret. It's not really a secret, but I think of it because every time I've been there, I very rarely run into anybody. And this is a property owned by the 300 Committee, and that is Shallow Pond Woodlands. Oh, you see, you do know about it. It's a beautiful area, and it abuts other. It's on Thomas Landers Road, and there is that lovely shallow pond, and it's. Connects, it's 70 acres that connect with the 68-acre Provogel Ponds Conservation Area to the west and the 46-acre Wade and Fender property to the north, creating this like 183-acre. But what's so fascinating about that is the different, you know, flora and fauna, if you will, like in that beginning, you feel like you're in the woods of Maine. The trees are so tall, right? It's a, yeah. you've been there, you know, it's a beautiful, beautiful spot. Okay, I hope it's not too crowded next time I go. All right, Randy's giving us a call from Nantucket. Hi, Randy.
Hi there. I thoroughly enjoy all the Nantucket Land Bank properties. It's been fabulous. But will the day ever come where the land bank, especially on Nantucket, because there's a finite amount of land and a big percentage is as it is going to be. Will the day ever come where the land bank says mission accomplished?
Hmm.
And not need to acquire anymore. I just want to know if anybody has envisioned that yet.
All right.
That's my question.
Okay, thanks, Randy. All right, Rachel, what do you think?
So we have actually discussed this. So as I mentioned before, about 50% of Nantucket is conserved, which is an extremely high amount, and it's incredible, right? We have amazing environmental resources. We have incredible open space, wonderful trails, fabulous public beaches. We're incredibly fortunate. And so I would like to think of it not as much as, you know, has the land bank accomplished their goal, but over the course and the lifetime of organizations, there's often shifts, right? And there's priorities. And the land bank's priority for a long time was conservation in addition to the existing conservation lands, but also, like I said, waterfront acquisitions for public beaches. And we have, the land bank has done an amazing job at that. So, you know, what is the future of the land bank? What are the next 40 years of the land bank? We've been in existence for 40 years now. The conservation landscape on Nantucket is changing, and we're aware of that. There is not a ton of additional tracts that are large for conservation. And so what does acquisition look like? You know, we are intensely looking at the nexus between affordable housing and conservation and really exploring this question right now. Do I think the land bank is done? No, I don't think the land bank is done. But do I think that we still have an active role to play on the island and in the community that can be beneficial to everyone? 100%.
Yeah. All right, Rachel, you mentioned the Nantucket beaches that are under the Nantucket Land Bank umbrella. And the great thing, as you said, parking, lots of beaches open to all. Any other favorite spots that you would like to mention that open spaces that are special for you?
Yeah, so my favorite new space that we have created is 321 Pulpus Road. It is windswept overlook, and it's a small land bank property, but what it does is it allows users to walk into the Nantucket Conservation Foundation's cranberry bogs that they're converting to ecological wetland habitat. And it's just really a fantastic property that opens up a gateway to the Middle Moors in a fabulous way.
Sounds
so nice. I'd encourage everyone to stop by.
All right. Lee writes, please add the Coonamesset River Trust for a wonderful place for bird watching, as well as counting herring, easy walking paths too. Lee, thanks for that. All right, Darcy, what's on the vineyard? It doesn't have to be all trustees' property. What's some of your favorite spots?
I'm going to start with Cascada Coteau on Nantucket. And just and each of my favorite spots is like, it's what mood we're in, but Cascada Coteau always never ceases to impress with its magnificence and wildlife that just really abounds there all year round. And on the vineyard, you know, if I want to hike, it's Menomsha Hills. If I want just like quiet peace, large landscapes, it's Long Point Wildlife Refuge. If I want to go to a quiet beach, it's Waisquay. You know, if I were a fisherman, I'd want to go to Waisquay too, or Leland Beach. And if I want to see the community just loving nature and enjoying these beautiful beaches, I go to Cape Hogan, Leland. It's just really extraordinary, all of these places. And my non-favorite trustees place is Cedar Tree Neck that's owned by Sheriff's Meadow Foundation, which is just an extraordinary long hike with beautiful North Shore beach.
Worth some of us taking a little ferry ride, right? All right, Mike, what about you? What tempt us for some spots in the Harwich area?
Yes, well, we're working on the finishing touches of the gateway to the 66-acre Robert F. Smith Colebrook Preserve that just underwent an incredibly transformative ecological restoration right in the heart of Harwichport. And timing is such that parking lot will reopen on Earth Day, April 22nd. Mm-hmm. So mark your calendars.
Nice.
Head on down to 203 Bank Street. And there's a wonderful trailhead there that leads to a half mile wheelchair accessible all persons trail. Another 1.5 miles of other footpaths, 4 footbridges. Colebrook now runs wild and free for the first time in over a century through 4 interconnected ponds as it makes its way down to Sacotucket Harbor on Nantucket Sound. Wildlife it abounds. It's just incredible to see all ages and folks of all physical abilities out there enjoying nature.
Yeah. Since you mentioned All Persons Trail, I also want to mention the Wellfleet Bay Wildlife Sanctuary. If you have not been out, take a ride out 5 miles of trails through different habitats, including shaded pine, oak, and hickory woodlands, salt marsh, freshwater ponds, great for bird watching. I think we took Jackson there for his first bird watching trip when he was 3. And he said, I hope I see my best bird. And I thought, oh, please don't say penguin or something. I said, what is your best bird? The robin. Yes, we will see the best bird. All right, Mark, tempt us for some of your favorite spots.
Well, I've had the advantage of working regionally for most of my career, so I know all the trails pretty well. But I have to say that I don't think anybody who lives on Cape Cod can really say they know Cape Cod if they're physically able, if they haven't walked the Snail Road Dunes in Provincetown.
Right.
So, I mean, it's to be out there in the windswept dunes, walking about a half hour to get to the big beach. And a half hour back. It's very loose sand. It's a tough walk. You have to be in good shape, but it's worth the reward. And you know, I talk to people from the Upper Cape, and they never go to the National Seashore. It's only an hour away. It's no different than going from the Upper Cape to Boston, but people just don't think about it.
And it's a much nicer drive. Yeah,
right. And sometimes,
yeah. And that old one's that fire trail that goes out to Race Point Lighthouse. That is a great trail to take, especially when the right whales are swimming around, because the water, it just, and you hear Mark Faraday all the time talking about the great birds that everybody sees out at Race Point, right? So hike that trail out, look for the whales, look for the birds. That's another great spot. I guess it's like people, as you're saying, Rachel, well, they want to kind of stay in their backyard, but there's so much, and it's so much diversity that we have. That, you know, we need to get people to get out and explore a little more, right? But I guess we also have to be careful of private properties, right? we don't want to step on that. You earlier, Mark, mentioned a thing coming up to let people know about different ways they can donate or purchase land. When is that again?
So this is Saturday, June 21st, and it's at the Harwich Community Center. It's a free workshop for anybody in the public, but we're primarily inviting landowners who have land that they're interested in preserving and learning more about the ways and means of doing that and the tax benefits. We'll have tools available to show people how their land fits into some of these natural resource evaluation criteria. And it's a great chance to learn from a number of experts from around the Cape about this.
Right. And then are there possibilities? I mentioned there's not a one size fits all, but can people do things that they still can have life rights or something or things like that?
Sure.
Are those?
Yeah, we're talking about all the different techniques. Conservation doesn't mean having to give up the land. There are a number of tools, including conservation restrictions, reserve life estates, that enable people to stay on their land, enjoy their privacy, but extinguish the development rights in some or all of the land, and continue to use it as they have in a way that's not injurious to the natural resources.
Right. So one way, a quick email here. Listening this morning from the mountains of Western North Carolina, where we're trying, just like you, to protect land from development. Every trip to the Cape, we are impressed with how much land you're able to protect, but there's still more we can all do. Kudos to all who preserve land for our future and our kiddos. Keep up the great work. Thank you, Kent, for that note. And here we are up against the clock. Janet Milkman, Executive Director at Barnstable Land Trust. Mike Locke, Executive Director, Harwich Conservation Trust. Rachel Freeman, Executive Director of the Nantucket Land Bank. Darcy Schofield, Islands Director for the Trustees of Reservations. And Mark Robinson, Executive Director of the Compact of Cape Cod Conservation Trust. We're going to post a link with more information about the parcels and organizations we mentioned this hour at our website, capeandislands.org. Thank you all. Thanks for the work that you do.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
I'm Mindy Todd. Thanks for listening.
The Point is produced by Amy Vince. The executive producer is Mindy Todd. Production assistance from Jenny Junker and Dan Tridle. Theme music by Benjamin Verdery and William Coulter.